Space, The Final Frontier. These are the episodes of the podcast Expounded Universe. Its continuing mission, to explore that one time they met the X-Men. To seek out new jokes and new observations. To boldly read the prologue and the first two chapters.
It's time to get into the Uncanny Expounded Universe. Oh, that's right. It's the discussion podcast where we read Star Trek The Next Generation meets X-Men, and only that, forever and ever.
Oh, good. So it's this, and that's it, because you said Next Generation, so we can't even read the comic books where they meet the original series?
Exactly.
Why did I give you the reins?
Yes, that's right.
Why do you start all your podcasts with the word and?
And it's time.
You're killing me. Anyway, you should probably introduce us.
Anyway, if this is your first time showing up here, then I'm John, and over there is Jeff.
They might be. This is a new kind of podcast now.
It's a new kind of podcast. It's a new day.
It's little.
Yes, it is.
Yellow, different, and it's all about X-Men and Star Trek.
Indeed.
So what we are doing, if you're used to the show, you know that normally we review expanded universe Star Wars novels.
Yes.
One by one, whether they be set in very olden days with zombies or 25 years after the Battle of Yavin, we cover it all. But John has been threatening since the very first of days.
Oh, since the beginning.
Since chapter one, episode one of Shadows of the Empire, he's been saying, if you ever let me have control of the book selection for even a second, I will make it be this Star Trek, The Next Generation, X-Men, Planet X crossover fan fiction book written by Michael Jan Friedman.
That's right.
In a heartbeat.
Your concentration slipped for the barest moment, and I grabbed those reins.
I faltered. I faltered it for just a brief instant, and I looked back, and when I was a pillar of salt, it was then he struck.
And now you're little bits of salt.
Yeah, well, I was just, you know, I was already had a really high sodium count. I don't live a healthy life.
What I'm saying is, I'm mostly salt at this point.
I'm like the Dead Seas of people.
I'm so salty.
So salty, indeed.
It's like I'm playing League of Legends over here.
I don't even understand that reference.
Video games.
I don't play the MOBAs. I play the Moombas, if you want to talk about Final Fantasy VIII.
Ooh, I play the Roombas.
Ooh, yeah, those are a fun game to play. Have you ever actually seen a Roomba in action for a long period of time?
Yeah.
You start playing that same game you play with screensaver. You're like, oh, is that Roomba going to hit the exact corner? Come on.
Get there. Get there.
Oh, it hit both corners. God damn it. So, anyway, yeah, John, why don't you lead us on this one? Because this is your God-given choice by me. Your God-given choice that I gave you.
For I am God.
I make no such claim.
It is you who have said it is so. So we're going to start out with... this book has a prologue and an epilogue, but the prologue for this is neither the next-gen people or the X-Men. Instead, we are on the titular Planet X, and we are going to follow Arid Sovar on his journey of self-discovery, and not masturbatory either.
Yeah, no, it's self-discovery of kind of like a spiritual kind, and not a crank-yanking kind.
Yeah, he's not making puppet-based crank calls.
You know what? For a brief shining moment of joy, I almost forgot that Comedy Central show existed. Like I do with every Comedy Central show.
So Arid is on his way to the sacred grounds where there's a bunch of rocks and stuff, and he's gonna sit up there and become a new person. This is their
very next generation.
Oh, this is their rite of passage for these people, is you go sit on a rock and sing.
Mm-hmm. And then you do that all night, and the next morning you'll have become
a new person
or an adult or whatever. Crawdman Dune, that's another one that you've forgotten about, haven't you?
What?
Comedy Central shows that you have definitely for sure forgotten ever existed.
I don't know that I ever knew it existed.
It was a fantasy joke show in the same vein as like Gallivant, but without the songs.
What was it called?
Crawdman Dune.
Crodman Dune. Never heard of it.
You also got That's My President.
Oh, yeah.
I don't
that
know.
That one I remember.
More of them. That
Others.
Ugly Americans. That one, I think that one might have even gotten two seasons.
Who knows?
I don't know. I don't know why I'm doing this. It's maybe it's because this book was very stilted and really feels like it's going to be a fanfic all the way through.
Oh, yeah. I mean, honestly, I feel like the prologue is probably the best writing because the second they get a hold of any known characters, they're like, ooh, baby, it's my turn now.
To the credit of the author, even the prologue, which is about a kid, like a young adult going through a journey of self-discovery, is very TNG style.
Yeah, which is good.
I mean, the writing is good enough that you can almost feel his loose-fitting carpet sample shirt that everyone...
For sure. He was wearing some shirt that sort of looked like a bathrobe and was open along the chest.
Yeah.
He had some manner of, like, khaki pants that were a little too tight.
Ill-fitting khaki pants that kind of look like they bag in the butt but are too tight everywhere else.
Yeah.
80s style, late 80s style, sensitive hair, or a sensible haircut. You know exactly what this guy looks like. Probably has some crap glued to his face.
Yeah. He's got purple blood, apparently, so I assume he's got some sort of weird thing that makes him not look exactly human.
And they mentioned that his skin is a rich bronze.
Yes.
Which I have to assume means that he's just sort of a cool POC type dude, and not that he's, like, got magic.
Literally bronze.
Alien skin, yeah.
I mean, that's the one thing you can get in stuff like the books for Star Trek, is they can be like, and now we meet a alien race you've never seen before, and they look way better than we'd be able to do on the show.
It's funny that they don't seem to have tried to bother. This guy's still a guy. Like, he's, like, got legs that he can sit in cross-legged position, and arms and legs, and he's just normally bipedal and everything. There are some Star Wars novels that pull that move, where they're like, and then they all meet, like, a sentient caterpillar who goes on an adventure with them, and you're like, you know what? In Star Trek shows, they can't afford that shit.
No.
The closest they ever get is, like, in Star Trek, it's usually just floating clouds of things.
Oh, yeah. You get fart gods, and then you get people with crap on their face.
Trills, I think, might be the closest you get to something interesting.
Yeah, you get little worms.
Or you get people making references to interesting-looking things that you'll never actually see. Like, in the whole, there's a whole thing in DS9 where Jadzia dates, until she marries Worf, Jadzia spends all of her time dating random aliens that no one ever gets to see.
Yeah.
They're like the oh gosh, what's her name? What's Niles' wife?
Maris?
Maris. They're like the Maris of DS9. Especially this dude who's like Captain something or other who has a transparent skull.
Yes.
They just go on and on. I'm like, who cares does he have transparent skin, too? That's really important. Otherwise, his transparent skull is irrelevant, and I don't know why you guys keep harping on it.
I could see right through his skull if that skin wasn't there.
And that musculature, that hair.
So Arid Sovar is out here, and he's telling all his friends, I'm going to go do this ritual thing, and when I come back, why, you're not even gonna recognize me. I'll be a whole different person.
Apparently humility does not play into their whole personal change ritual, because
he's foreshadowing really does,
because he's just like, you dickshits don't even know how to do this rite of passage. I'm gonna come out of there so crazy changed that you won't even know who I am. I'm the best at this particular ancient religious ritual.
And for them, the rite of passage apparently happens at about 22 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know what he's going... I don't know if it's weird years for that planet, or if they just wait a while for that, or if their species only gets puberty at 22, whatever it happens to be.
He could be marrying into, like, the local equivalent of a Catholic family, and he has to go through a late-period catechism. Even then, that'd be weird to be bragging about that. Oh, I'm going to be the fucking best at catechism. I hope there's a saint best at this, because that's going to be the one I choose.
Actually, there is saint best at this.
Oh, good.
This is the patron saint. It's sucking dick.
Oh, good.
Because I'm going to be the best at it.
Yeah. Whatever I set out to do.
So, yeah, he goes and sits on some rocks, and their whole thing is you got to sit there and sing all night, and there's a song that will come to you, and by singing it, you will contact the spirits, and then the true you will be revealed.
Yep, so he has to go to an empty, kind of boring scrubland plane, it describes it as, which exactly sounds like the kind of thing that they could do on budget with a TNG episode.
Oh, yeah, they're like, and then they showed up somewhere in some scrubland, California.
Where there was a pile of convenient rocks.
And so convenient, definitely styrofoam rocks.
With a ladder on the side. And he goes up there and he sits cross-legged and he sits until a song comes to him. And then he's like, down by the bay.
Where the watermelons grow.
Oh, sorry. I'm a dad of a one-year-old, so.
Yes.
That song makes me sad, John.
Why?
Because why does he want... I mean, his mom's just going to ask him an innocuous, weird question. Then he's like, I don't want to go home. What if my mom asks if I've seen a goat in a boat?
See, but that's the thing, is... The whole song is just about a man's inability to deal with his mother's dementia, and he does not want to go home because his mother is going to have an episode.
Exactly. That's why the song makes me sad.
It's so sad.
It's so sad, and yet it's presented as this children's song where you're just supposed to be like, oh, yeah, well, if I go home, my mom will ask me a wacky question. And I'm like, well, okay, either that's not a big deal and you're being weirdly overreactive about your parents, or this is the saddest song. This is the saddest song. It is just 9 words long. I didn't stop to count those words.
Oh, shit. So, yeah.
Aaron Sovar
gets rained on. It's real chilly. It kind of sucks for him.
Mm-hmm. It's not a good day to be Aaron Sovar. It's cold at night. It gets a little rainy. But he's like, I'll just find meaning in the song. I'll just reach within and sing the song even harder.
And the thing is... He does end up at a point where he's like, nah, man, I've got it. I'm feeling great. Like, I don't notice the cold anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm real into my tunes.
Yeah, he gets so much enlightenment.
And then he realizes, like, oh, man, I hadn't even thought about it, but it's daylight now, and here comes the sun, doot and doo-doo.
And then he gets up to get off the rocks, but oh, no, he's been sitting cross-legged so long that his legs are all... sleepy.
Yeah, and he tries to climb down, but then he tumbles and hits his head. He's got purple blood.
Yeah, he reaches up and feels some purple fluid on his fingers. Blood, he says.
He reaches up, goes, oh, purple stuff. Sonny D.
Oh, shit. I've always wondered if I was one of the Sonny D people or one of the purple stuff people of my planet.
Oh, no, I'm one of the purple stuff people.
I shall have to move underground with the Morlocks. But he's like, oh, that's no big deal. I just kind of lies on the ground laughing to himself until he gets his bearings again. Because, fuck it, he's got enlightenment and a new purpose and so on.
Yeah, he's like, the whole world looks beautiful now, and I've discovered the real me, and I'm going to go back home, and I'm going to share who I am with everyone.
Even this crappy chunk of California chaparral, a good 40 minutes from La Cienega, looks amazing.
And that's when... the transformation begins.
Mm-hmm.
His metamorphosis into a big old roach.
Yes, he is.
It's very Kafka-esque, this prologue.
It's so Kafka-esque. I wish that they did that with more authors, like other than just him and Rabelais.
That's very Faulkner-esque.
Exactly. Like, if shit doesn't make any fucking sense, but you can kind of tell it's about death. Like, this is very Faulkner-esque.
This book sucks. It's very Faulkner-esque.
Yeah.
So he starts trying to walk, and then he's like, oh, my legs feel heavy. And my arms feel heavy.
Ooh, check out my sweet veins. I got good vein action. The ladies are going to dig this shit.
Oh, man, my veins are bulging. It's like I just did sweet reps.
Yeah. Man, I must have lost a bunch of pounds and become a drunk weirdo wandering around the California wilderness. This is all very Steinbecky.
Oh, Steinbecky.
Steinbeck doesn't get an esk.
Steinbesk.
It's either Steinbeckish or Steinbecky. Sorry about that. Anyway, his veins are starting to stick out, and they're all like hard and stuff.
Oh yeah, he's getting a lot of blood rushing to places that blood normally doesn't rush to. He's becoming a man.
Yeah. With some rockin' vascularity. And also his skin is turning purple instead of its usual bronze, as if the blood has rushed to the surface.
Indeed. And he's like, you know, even though it looks like I've essentially broken every blood vessel in my arms and legs, I don't feel any pain. I've just sort of look weird. And then he sees himself in a reflection of a puddle, and he's like, oh, fuck me.
Ah, crap, I'm a purple monster.
I look real fucking weird now.
I'm the Incredible Bulk. Well, I ain't Barney the Purple Dinosaur. And then...
Al Holland! Major Glory!
Oh, man. The infragable Krunk.
Yeah.
Took me a second, but I remembered it.
So our boy, the infragable Krunk here,
thinks at least my fingers still look normal
like
to himself.
I still got bronze fingers, and that's great.
That's what I want. But all of a sudden, his fingers start glowing, a hazy shade of winter.
And he's like, Elliot, come.
Ouch. Well, no, his fingers start glowing, and he's like, oh, shit, what now? And then his fingers fire a blast of concentrated mutant energy into a wall nearby.
Yeah, he's got laser fingers now, so yep. He starts just shooting them off all over the place, just finger gunning as hard as he can.
As soon as you realize you can shoot off, that's all you do for the rest of that day.
Oh, yeah, he just lies down, pointing towards the heavens, and starts shooting off.
I've become a man now, he laughs to himself.
Ha 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 ha! Just like all of my people, I will now shoot off into the air.
Right before he gets some laser in his eye and it hurts real bad.
Oh no!
Oh, crap!
Oh, how am I going to clean this?
Anyway, yeah, he's out in the desert firing laser beams, and they stop just coming out of his fingers and start just shooting from wherever after a while, too. Like, he is, whatever's going on with him, it's a big deal.
So, eventually, the lasers die down, and he's just like, all right, well, now what the fuck do I do? Because I'm a big purple monster, and I have no idea what to do with myself. And that's pretty much where it ends.
Yeah, that's the prologue. And thank you so much for listening.
We're going to do it one chapter at a time. 33 episodes, baby.
From now on, all we review is the prologues of books.
After that, we'll be doing a new podcast, The Epilogues of Books.
We'll just do one.
That's our bonus content, is the epilogues.
I think here's the book we should, the new podcast we should do. It's called Forward. And we just write unofficial and unauthorized forewords to books that already exist.
Great.
And it's just that. It's just like, this is the forward to Moby Dick. John, go.
Hey, everyone. It's me, your pal, Moby. I did techno, you remember? Anyway, here's dick pics.
Yeah, didn't he have some kind of thing where he went bad towards the end?
I mean, he had a weird thing where he was like, I definitely dated Natalie Portman.
Oh, that's
like,
right.
No, you really didn't.
Yeah, and he's like, no, I'm pretty sure I dated Natalie Portman, Natalie Portman.
Pretty sure I did, though. There's this picture of you and me together, and I'm smiling. Obviously, we were dating.
And she's like, that's a picture of you with a picture of me.
That's you with a fat head of me on the wall.
Oh, those Natalie Portman fat heads. I don't know why Fathead never branched out. It's always sports with those guys.
Always sports with these guys.
I think they might have eventually branched out and you could buy like X-Men and Star Trek Fatheads, or Star Wars Fatheads.
Who knows?
Yeah. But just a Natalie Portman one where she's just Natalie Portman.
Yeah, you just got a Natalie Portman Fathead.
I'm a true Natalie Portman mega fan.
I only drink Natalie Porters.
And I only eat Natalie Portman Chico cheese.
And I only use Natalie Portmanteaus.
Goddamn.
Hot damn. Chapter one.
Any Natalie Portman in a storm.
Chapter one.
Fine.
There we go. Okay, just waiting.
Nah, go ahead.
Nah, I'm good.
Yeah, I'm done.
So chapter one follows another character for a bit of it that does not matter and will not matter forever.
Yeah, security officer yellow shirt.
Yeah,
it's TNG era, so security can't be called red shirts anymore. We're gonna play by the rules.
Exactly. This yellow shirt, Marco Palmieri, is wandering around a starbase
working on a linguine recipe.
He's throwing pasta at the wall and saying gabagoo.
I mean, that would be very TNG if he was like, I'm obsessed with 1950s Italians.
That's all I care about.
That's all I use the holodeck, which could do anything, I remind you.
I could do anything in the holodeck, but all I do is go back to, like, mafioso-esque 1950s Italian eateries and ask for Mama Spagooch.
Let me get a linguine Adriatico, huh? with the good of Popo.
Come on.
Anyway, Marco Palmieri, I don't know why we went on that tangent, is the yellow shirt at the beginning of this chapter. I don't believe he's going to matter in the long run.
No, he is just here to mostly bitch and complain about how boring his life is, but also he's here to tell us when exactly this book takes place in the Star Trek timeline.
Yeah, there's a couple different, honestly, the next two chapters are a tremendous amount of scene setting.
Well, yeah, because his whining is like, oh, it's so boring here, even though currently the Dominion is a problem, mm-hmm. and also Cardassia is making troubles again. So it's happening. Let's go ahead and say season what, 5 of DS9, maybe 6? Yeah,
well, I think this has got to be set. It's right after, I mean, we find out later on in the next chapter, this is also right after Worf and Jadzia got married.
Oh, so, that's true.
Yeah, so we know that this is somewhere, this is not towards the, it's in the middle of the Dominion Wars, probably before they infested infested Earth.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. No,
this is, we know Jem'Hadar exist, and we know the Dominion is around.
The other thing that we eventually learn throughout the course of this chapter is that it takes place after Star Trek First Contact.
Yes. Because Data has a chip.
Yeah, Data has the memory chip.
Emotion chip, thank you.
Data finally has a memory. A thing
he has some memory.
He never learned memory before. He finally has a copy of the board game Memory, all his
own. Before this, Data just had a bunch of tattoos on him. He's like, oh, don't trust his lies. That's weird.
These are super vague tattoos.
Find John G. Who the fuck is that?
These tattoos are far too vague. It's almost like I'm in some sort of backwards movie.
I wish I had some way to keep track of things. Something that would remind me, like a memento of something.
Maybe I could just write shit down and not get vague tattoos.
Just have a note that says, hey, my dude.
All he needs is that VHS from the end of 51st Dates.
Ah.
Hey, you're married to me. There's nothing you can do about it, person who doesn't remember me. I'm Adam Sandler. Remember how romantic everyone thinks this horrifying scenario is?
I've trapped you into a life with me.
You don't know your children. So, sorry about that. Marco Palmieri.
Marco Palmieri is letting us know this is the story of a girl. And he's real sad because he wants to get shipped off to a starbase. Maybe that's closer to the action because he knows trying to get onto a starship is hard.
Yeah, there's not a lot of berths out there on starships for eager young security officers.
Yeah, he's fresh out the academy.
Yeah, which is why he's serving on Starbase 88.
Indeed, off in the Ballsack district of whatever, who gives a shit.
Yeah, it's probably near one of those plants where nothing bad ever. It's over by Ryza or something.
And no one has ever done anything to it or will.
Yeah, there's nothing ever goes wrong here. Oh, man, I'm in pack-led space. This sucks.
So he's just hoping something would happen, and then it does.
Yeah, a temporal anomaly flares off in cargo tricorder. Bay 7 or something, and he's ordered to go check it out by his commanding officer, who's like, Clark's like, hey, Palmieri. Yes, Lieutenant, or whatever your rank is.
Or whatever, whoever you are. I don't know where I am right now.
Yes, Clark. Did you just get a report of a temporal disturbance in an area? Yes. Okay, go check it out. Okay.
Aw, now I'm sad again, because if it was anything cool, they wouldn't have just sent me alone. And I'm like, nah, that's not true.
That's a defeatist attitude, son. You gotta...
Dude, they will always send one person to go check some shit out.
It's usually Worf.
You're not badass enough, though, so don't worry, they won't beat you up.
Well, anyway, he goes to the room, but unfortunately, by the time he gets there, the temporal disturbance is gone. Damn, he thinks. Nothing interesting ever happens to me, Marco Palmieri.
Marco!
Palmieri.
Marco!
Fish out of water.
Damn it!
Okay, yeah, Marco Palmieri is in this little cargo bay looking around, and he's like, damn, nothing cool ever happens for me, and that's when there's an even bigger flash of temporal disturbances.
Yeah. And he covers his eyes, and there's a huge bright light. And then he lowers his arm, and he's like, wait a minute. There's some people over here.
I better check this room for chronoton particles.
Except no.
Yeah, he didn't do that. There's no mention of particles of any kind.
He's just like, huh. Looks like there's 7 people. And they're talking to each other, and boy, can you basically tell who's who by the shitty way that they are written.
Oh, boy, this is going to get rough. There's no chronoton particles, but there's bacon bits. Anyway, yeah, there are 5 male and 2 female people who have suddenly appeared out of nowhere in the room. And with an Irish accent, one of them says, like, ah, laddie, are the time hooks we were carrying still here?
That's,
Scottish?
That's real bad, yeah.
Thank you. Why don't you do it?
So, where is he? Ah, yeah, there he is. I've got a better question. Where are we, time hook devices?
There you go. Because one of our people is a wasted spot on fucking Banshee.
Oh, yeah. You get seven X-Men to send, and they're like, oh, who are we going to send out here? Well, obviously Wolverine. We'll send Storm. Maybe Nightcrawler.
It's the mid-90s, so people still like Shadowcat for some stupid reason.
People continue to like Shadowcat for some stupid reason.
Shadowcat gets interesting eventually, but she eventually takes...
As soon as she has a dragon.
Well, Lockheed is interesting regardless of her. No, it's when she takes over the Guardians, and she literally dresses like the movie version of Quill. And it's just like, look, I'm awesome. Let me on your ship. I'll be the captain. And they're like, hell yeah, dude.
Sweet.
Also, Agent Venom is there.
Oh, Agent Venom.
Yeah, it's a weird cast, but she's great. She's great. So anyway, but this is still Shadowcat as of the 90s, where she's wearing a lot of yellow and has a huge perm. Kind of looks like a poodle.
But you can basically tell who is talking by either they use we because they are Irish, or they are said to have a gruff voice, so you know it's Wolverine.
Mm-hmm.
Or they'll end a sentence with Tovarish.
I don't even think they gave a single line to him.
They do.
Oh, did they end it with Tovarish?
No.
Okay, that's good. And then the Archangel's there, too. You can just tell because there's a blue guy. And this is the stupidest logical line for Palmieri to go through, where he's like, there's a blue guy. I guess he could be Andorian or...
Oh, he's definitely not. He's not any of the blue races I know.
They have six blue races, and so here we go. Here's six, but none of them have giant metal wings coming out of their backs.
Looks like the wings are actually coming out of them instead of just worn. Also, there's some other blue guy, which wouldn't be that weird, and he's got three fingers and toes. Also, again,
pretty
Star
normal.
Trek, not yeah. that weird. He does have a weird tail, though, and that's the part I think is strange.
Yeah, I'm kind of sad that the thing that wasn't strange wasn't Nightcrawler's 90s outfit, which is very dick-centric.
Why do you got a big old arrow pointing towards your crotch there? Eh?
And I was kind of hoping for
it's for the Fraulein.
See, that's exactly. I was kind of hoping for some German dialectic. We don't get it.
No, we get the Irish, but we don't get any Russian or German.
Yeah, no, he's just like, as you wish, ma'am, as he does whatever Storm tells him. Maybe he's working on that. But yeah, there was a period there where he was basically wearing a singlet pointed at his dick.
Yeah.
I think that's still what everyone thinks of when they think of Nightcrawler.
Oh, pretty much, yeah.
It's just a one-piece bathing suit with giant shoulder things.
Oh, yeah, he had the weird... like curled up shoulder bits,
mm-hmm.
and then a big red V pointed right at the dickus.
Yeah, which if you saw that in real life, you'd be like, dude, that's a little much.
My God, come on, man. What are you doing that you need to wear that?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm doing. I'm wearing for my thigh highs with two more arrows on them. I don't want there to be any confusion.
Look, I am drawing the eye to the most important place is what I am doing.
The business, as so to speak. But yeah, he's like, well, who are these people? Five of them are men and two of them are women. Beautiful women, I might add.
The fact that at this point, Marco freaks out for some reason. He's like, oh, I better pull this because... they apparently appeared out of nowhere, which, this is Star Trek, I assume people can do that.
Yeah, transporting is a thing.
Yeah. But he's like, oh, hey, you stay right there, and I'm going to pull a phaser out. And they're like, hey, man, chill out.
Don't do that.
And instead of being like, okay, who are you? He's just like, back the fuck off, man!
Yeah, and that's when Clark shows up. His commanding officer, Lieutenant Clark, comes in.
Well, no, first he has to get his shit pushed in.
Oh, does he? Okay, fair enough. So first he's like, hey, I've got this gun, stay away from me!
And Wolverine tries to be like, hey, buddy, you're not going to do anything with that.
But Wolverine is so shticky. Like, just as in the 90s...
It's time for the old Knucklehead to take care of this.
Hey, why don't you just tell the old Knucklehead the things that I wanted to know before I cuts you up real good, because I'm the best there is at what I bubs.
Let me tell you, bub, I've been slapped by bigger and better than you. Okay, great. And yeah, then he just gets phasered and blasted against a wall, and you're like, that may not have been the best choice.
Maybe you should have used plain language, Wolverine.
And that's when we get Colossus steps forward and is like,
yeah, he turns himself to metal. Good job. Now do the... he's going to keep interrupting. Now do the Dazzler noise from the same game.
I don't know. The only noise I know from the old X-Men arcade game is Colossus's... Because I was like, what are you doing, my dude?
So Colossus steps in front of Wolverine to prevent any further shooting and turns on his metal skin, much to the surprise of our... our illustrious young ensign or whatever he
is. He's like, oh my god, you got bigger and metal. It's a shapeshifter.
It must be one of the Dominion. It's probably a founder then.
I mean, he doesn't say founder.
He just says shapeshifter.
Yeah.
I guess he's leaving it open that could be one of the other Star Trek shapeshifters.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, there are a few. He doesn't look like he's after Salt, though, so probably not that one.
That's fair.
But
I'm just glad he doesn't just go, fucking Q!
I wonder how many people in Starfleet know about Q that aren't, like, fairly high ranking.
Well, I mean, you have to go by the numbers, right? So in the TNG era, Q shows up to bother all three of the captains that any show is about.
Well, yeah.
All three of them get a visit, which means just by the numbers, either that's an incredible coincidence or Q is bothering everyone.
Or these are the only interesting things happening. Like, Q's not going to show up on some fucking, like, medical ship that's just running supplies.
Well, the other problem is that half the time when Q shows up, there's just nothing going on. It's just like, what's going on?
We're on a mission to go to some planet. Oh, time to fuck with you.
All right, time to send you to the Old West.
I'm going to make all of you my merry men.
Our dreams are coming true on this ship. So he's just like, I show up on boring ships and fix things. And just given the percentages, he has to be bothering more than three of them. I feel like there should be at least one episode where the captain, like all the captains of Starfleet, are in some big meeting hall.
Oh, you get an almost got him.
Yeah.
And it's just all their stories about times Q showed up.
Fucking Q.
Ah.
There's like a whole table of captains. They're just the Q-bothered captains.
It showed up and made it so that the only thing our replicator would make was caterpillars. I don't know why.
You think that's bad.
One time, I almost hit him with a rock.
It was a big rock.
Anyway, Nightcrawler teleports behind him, grabs the phaser, and is like, peace out, bitch. And that's when Clark shows up.
Yeah, Clark shows up. He's like, oh, good, back up. That'll help me with this situation.
Hooray. Now we won't escalate this any further.
Now,
which at least Clark is like, hey, let's actually talk instead of just firing guns at each other.
Let's calm down on this one. Now, Shadowcat is reacting to the whole situation by getting scared and phasing through the floor.
Yeah, good job, Shadowcat. You're a real hero.
Yep. Well, I mean, I feel like this is a very young Shadowcat. We don't get any dialogue from her or anything, but...
See, but this is post-Blue and Yellow Squad, which means she has to have been on the team for a while now.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't a fresh-faced Shadowcat.
That said, I feel like they're writing Shadowcat as a scared little shrinking violent type character, so it might be that despite the fact that there's been some growth in the X-Men continuity, this is definitely the greatest hits.
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, when you're gonna write a fanfic, you're gonna take the favorites of everyone's personality and just go, oh yeah, that's what you are. I like it when Wolverine is shticky, so that's what he is right now.
I like cartoon Wolverine.
Na-na-na-na-na-na.
You got any robots I can slice up? Otherwise, I can't even get the claws out. Licensing. At this point, Storm finally steps forward because she's the leader of the team and is like, hey.
Chill your shit.
Calm down, everyone. Let's all come. We don't need to fight with you. We're just some people who got on your ship on accident. Everyone chill. And that's when Banshee gets in and just brogues the fuck out of the situation. Oh, my God. He's annoying. Why is he there? Any other X-Man?
Oh, you do not see it. It's the same outfit, the same insignia. Oh, saints preserve us.
Each and every one of them is wearing a heart or star or clover.
Oh, hearts, stars, horseshoes, clovers, and blue moons.
Because Banshee, they even describe him as being a ruddy Irish man with red hair in his yellow and green outfit. And that Banshee outfit is the worst X-Men costume, short of 80s.
Short of Nightcrawler's dick pointer.
Dick pointer. You know what? I shouldn't say worst. There's too many.
There's so many bad costumes.
I was thinking of when Shadowcat was wearing the, like, early 90s.
Oh, the, like, buccaneer outfit?
Yeah, the bucket with six colors, just hip teenage nothing.
Ugh.
There's so many bad X-Men costumes, and this is just one of them.
At least Wolverine's in his blue and yellow, so he's got a decent outfit.
Yeah, yeah. And Storm, I assume, is in punk outfit, because this...
No. Because
we get
a description of the hair.
No, she's... Yeah, so she'll definitely be in cartoon.
Yeah, she'll be in the silver.
She's described as a dark beauty with a shock of platinum hair.
Yeah. But at that point, they're like, hey, we know someone here. Do you know?
Do you know a fellow by the name of Picard? And you're like,
oh yeah, everyone knows who Picard is. He's a hero of Starfleet.
Yeah, he constantly tries to go undercover and stuff, which is just fucking ridiculous.
It's real dumb.
Yeah, and it's a world where everyone has pictures of everyone. It's really bad, and yet he constantly does it.
We just humor him because he's a hero.
Yeah, you have to. He's like the highest ranking captain. He holds the rank of captain.
It's better than admiral.
And they're like, yeah, we know Picard. He's the captain of Flash. Oh, very good then, because he's a friend of ours.
Yeah. So you could get him on the horn.
Yeah, just call him. Just call the only relevant Star Trek guy. Oh, you don't want to talk to Benjamin Sisko? Oh. No one wants. He wouldn't take this seriously.
He'd be like, get these people off my fucking station.
Pass.
Hard pass. I know this is some Q bullshit. No. You take that to a show with other dumb shit.
Do you have wings made out of your arms connecting to your legs, sir? I do, yes. Okay,
we're done here.
Some of us work for a living.
I have things to do. I'm on the front of a war. Why don't you go dick around on the flagship?
Now, unless you're just a weirdly dressed 1940s baseball team, I have to ask that you vacate.
Please put on these outfits or go.
But no, it's please call Picard.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much the end of the X-Men for this. But just to be clear, we were very curious about this going into the book. Which X-Men do you get?
And so, it's got Storm, Colossus, Nightcrawler, Wolverine, Shadowcat, Banshee, and
Archangel.
That's
the Archangels.
The Archangel.
The blue one with the metal wings. So this is very the cartoon.
Well, yeah, obviously.
Yeah. Okay, so there you go. That's what's going on with them. Meanwhile, on the Defiant... Oh, no, wait, I'm sorry.
No, meanwhile,
on Jaldia.
On Jaldia, the titular Planet X,
mm-hmm.
we have to deal with Pradasamon, Chancellor of the planet, the whole planet.
Yes, yeah. Well, because it's a Star Trek planet.
Yeah, every time there's a planet in Star Trek, there is only one government, and someone's in charge of it.
Or there's two governments, and they're fighting, but by the end of the episode, you get them to agree to sit at the same table.
Yeah, and that's it.
Yeah.
There's like a million different little governments all around here. We're split up into tiny states.
And they occasionally mention that the world used to be like that. They'll be like, one of the old nation states refused to join the Federation. I think it was Australia. And you're like, how would you have forgotten that when every one of you was so proud of shit from the 40s?
Well, that's all they care about.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care about politics from, like, the late 2000s, 2100s, or whatever it was.
Yeah, it's true. They only care about stuff that recently became public domain.
Yes. If we can mention it or play it, boy, howdy do I give a fuck.
Boy, we sure all do love Sherlock Holmesy times.
Boy, howdy do we.
It'd be great if just one of the TNG people was way into one of the other versions of Sherlock and that was all they would be willing to participate in.
They're like, you better give me that Cumberbatch.
The only Sherlock I participate in is the Robert Downey Jr. movies.
Weird, but okay.
I only like that cartoon where he's a kid in the future. It's still our past, but it's his future.
Look, the only thing I do is James Bond Jr.
The only Sherlock I like is the one where it's Lucy Liu, I think.
I think, maybe.
She might be the Watson.
I think she's the Watson.
I think she might be the Watson. But I love it. That's me.
But I love it all the same, even though I know nothing about it.
That's me. That's what Guinan does on the holodeck. This is my Guinan impression.
Hi, everyone. Guinan here.
All right. Well, anyway.
Pradis is, he's worried because we find out that these weird mutations are happening all over the planet.
Everyone, right around the age of 22, oh, not everyone, but a lot of people who recently hit the age of 22 are suddenly developing powerful and uncontrollable mutations that give them superpowers instead of what mutations usually do in Star Trek, which is like de-evolve you into an iguana or something.
Oh, I thought you were going to say, which unlike what mutations normally do, which is cancer.
Oh, well, no, that's non-Star Trek. That's real life.
Yeah.
In Star Trek, it's usually, oh, you're becoming a pygmy marmoset or something. Or that one episode where the two guys only become visible by, like, UV radiation light, and they have to live in a special space on the holodeck, and they were, like, famous radio DJs from Los Angeles.
Whoop, whoop.
Okay, there you go.
Anyway, so, yeah, he's like, it's only people around 22. Like, nobody older than that really is turning into this, and nobody younger is, so there's got to be some connection.
Mm-hmm.
But they're all from, like, disparate areas of the planet, so mm-hmm. it's not like a virus being passed person to person.
Yes. So he is troubled. There are concerns, and he just goes through a list. There's like, oh, this one lady like almost killed her family when she suddenly started sucking the heat out of everything nearby her.
Yeah, we've got someone who turned invisible, and some guy named Arid Sovar had laser beam fingers.
Back in the prologue, you know, that's when that happened.
Remember?
One guy accidentally, like some fisherman accidentally used his super strength to punch a hole in his own boat.
Which, what were you doing punching at your boat without super strength anyway?
I hate this boat, but in a way where I would like to retain its structural integrity. Oh my hubris.
Oh, no. And then he sends, he gets the chancellor, gets a meeting from the security minister.
Yeah, so the wharf of this planet shows up, and his name is Amon.
No, that's the chancellor. Tollet is the minister.
Oh, right, Tollet, excuse me. Tollet comes in and he's like, sir, we need your orders because the world is covered with mutants or something. Should we start building some sort of giant purple robot to get them?
I was thinking we could have some kind of sentinel show up and maybe we could put them into a mutant relocation area, some sort of registration for them maybe, and also... I don't know. I got this guy named Bishop, and I was thinking maybe we could put an M on his face.
We definitely want to stop this before they form some kind of liberation front.
What we really need is, I've got this island called Genosher, and we should put them there.
Genosher.
Genosher.
It's the Genosher Island.
I've got this island called Krakona.
Oh, don't worry about any of that. Just send for the Vermilion Warlock. He'll say no more mutants and we'll be fine.
No, more mutants.
That's what I keep dreaming will happen in the MCU.
Wanda,
do you think there should be less mutants?
No, more mutants.
Ta-da, the X-Men. So, first of all, we get my favorite problem in the book right here, where... Oh, it's good to see you, Chancellor, though I wish it was under better circumstances. He tilted his head in the direction of his desk. You've seen the lastest reports.
Oh, the lastest. I know it should be latest, but we got two different versions of this book, and they have not changed it.
Well, on the planet Jaldia, that's the word for most recent.
Yeah, the mostest recent.
The mostest recent.
That's right, the lastest.
They also love their beloved actress, Reese Witherspoon.
God damn it.
So anyway, have you seen these lastest reports? I have. There's like mutants or something all over the place.
So troubling. And then Amon is just like, hey, you know what we should do? Let's gather them all up and throw them in this fortress.
We have a random castle set somewhere. Excuse me. We have an old fortress we can put.
Someone just finished using the castle set on the other sound lot, so we're going to go ahead and use that.
We can put them in an old castle. What is your people
What's
not value?
What's the plan? I don't know. Just get all of the people who could possibly blow stuff up in one area. That should go well.
I don't understand. This is the kind of thing you would only see in a next-gen episode of any kind. It's like, oh, it's our whole planet. We have this one old castle that we don't want.
Hey, remember from the Seven Years' War?
Yeah.
An old fortress.
No one wants to live in it, even though it's a huge castle, so I guess we'll use it as an impromptu prison because we couldn't just put them in a prison.
Well,
so definitely
because they haven't done anything wrong, they can't be put in a prison. So they're like, oh, we pride ourselves on how forward-thinking and good we are, and it pains me to have to take these people and put them into a concentration camp.
Well, by concentration camp, again, I do mean historic landmark. This would be like, oh, there's mutants developing in the United States. I know. Let's get them all and stuff them into George Washington's nose on Mount Rushmore.
Oh, they'd just be like, oh, let's put them all in the Alamo.
I guess. Let's clear out the Alamo, which is currently an established tourist attraction, and then put mutants there.
Let's get Fort Sumter, and we're going to throw mutants in it.
It's got to be some kind of tourist thing that no one ever goes to and is now completely empty and vacant. Look, go to one of those giant dinosaurs along Route 66, and we'll store the mutants in there. So, anyway, that's the plan. But the Tollet is like, but sir, they aren't going to want to get taken away from their families and lives and locked in a castle.
But it's for the good of them and the people. They could hurt themselves or others.
Troubling. Indeed. Very troubling. And problematic, too.
But it's It's for the greater good.
Ah, yes, the greater good.
The greater good.
I'm still kind of sad that we haven't gotten the Zaldians forehead ridge situation.
We do not know what their wrinkle situation is.
In two meetings with them, we have yet to figure out exactly what little creases and folds and flaps and crap they have on their faces.
What do you got? Cheek stuff? Nose stuff? Forehead stuff? Come on.
You got that thing where you got two more nose holes? I mean... Which
you got ear stuff, chin stuff.
How about that thing where your chin connects to your nose and it makes it look like eating is a huge pain in the ass?
You got neck stuff, hand stuff. You want some hand stuff?
Well, it is part of our adulthood rituals. Anyway, we should probably get to the last half of chapter two because it's a large section that I like to call explaining why Worf is here.
Yeah, since Marco already told us that this is taking place during the Dominion War, you're like, wait a minute, why is Worf on the Enterprise? He's over on DS9. What's going on here?
Yeah, no, it shouldn't make any sense, but that's the way it always is in the movies, too, where they're always just like, oh, Worf, you're here, good, okay. Business as usual, then? Normal security chief, go sit in your room for the rest of this movie.
Get out, Worf's here.
But we start on the bridge of the Defiant, where Worf, it's just Worf and O'Brien are for some reason...
The only people that are... important
that are getting
nicked. I assume other people are there.
I mean, it depends on what season. If it's early Defiant storyline, then there's that Romulan lady whose whole job is to make sure that none of the Federation
nobody's
people
using their dumb crap, yeah, outside of
don't stay away from this cloaking device. That's my only job.
That's what I do. I press the button that says cloak.
Also, Eddington should be on there because he's assigned to be like the security super the other liaison.
The super liaison.
I forget his specific role, but that's before he defects to the Maquis. But all we hear about is O'Brien and in Worf. Now Worf is fresh from the honeymoon from his marriage to Jadzia Dax.
Oh yeah. So O'Brien is trying to engage with him,
mm-hmm,
and Worf is just like, "Nah, I'm good."
Yeah, the book's like, "Yeah, recently Worf has decided to show less emotion around his crewmates." I was like, are you sure that's a recent pro? Or are you just trying to revert him to classic Worf so that you can write the story?
Yep. Recently, Worf was like, I remember him and liked him.
Worf decided to put his hair back into his old haircut and put on a red shirt for some reason. Although, wait, he has red and he's wearing red in DS9.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's yellow on the Enterprise. So he decides to put on a yellow shirt for some reason. That makes
there
sense.
You go.
Yeah, that's what,
there
that's,
we
that's
are.
That's what I was looking for. Okay.
O'Brien's trying to be like, hey, say hi to all our friends since I'm not important enough to go on this mission. They couldn't think up an excuse to have old O'Brien there, but I am someone people remember.
But here's our rationale for it, the reason that Worf's along. There's recently been a big conference discussing how to engage with Klingons.
Maybe a kind of mofference.
It could be that, or it could just be one of the many symposia that they're always... the characters are always returning to and from in Star Trek TNG.
Yeah, so because it's during the Dominion War, they're like, we really need the Klingons' help with a bunch of stuff. So we're going to send you,
mm-hmm,
to a meeting with the Klingons, and because Sisko doesn't want to be without the Defiant for long...
blame him? He's at the forefront of the Jem'Hadar crisis.
Oh, yeah. So we're going to have you meet some other ship and get taken over there. That some other ship will, of course, be the Enterprise.
Yeah, famed space taxi, the Enterprise.
Who just show up anywhere and like, hey, you call for a lift?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're the flagship of the fleet, which means we don't have any jobs to do. That's our whole point is literally to ferry around people who have previously been on the Enterprise.
Oh, the second anyone's like... hey, I don't know, some ambassador or whatever needs to get picked up. Oh, we'll do it.
Hmm?
You are hundreds of light years away. We'll do it.
It's a 2-week journey from where he needs to be to where he needs to go.
We'll do it.
Okay. Oh, this all feels very silly.
We will do it.
So Worf is like, well, secretly, I am pleased to think about seeing my friends from the Enterprise once again.
But I will not show it because I am a warrior.
Yes. A lack of emotion is what is called for in this scenario. But, you know, he's like, I will return to DS9 as soon as possible to aid in the battle against the Dominion. But first I have to attend a symposia. Several of them.
Yeah.
Mini symposia.
Many symposia died to get us this information.
So, then I guess... at this point, he beams over to the Enterprise, and O'Brien takes his spaceship and goes home.
Yeah, he's like, all right, well, fuck you then, I'm out. And he gets over to there, and it's just some new transporter person that he doesn't know.
There's a new transporter chief, and the moment there's a new transporter chief, and he's like, oh, I was hoping to be met by a deck officer. I'm like, oh, God damn it. They do this like four times in the series where they use a surprise party on Worf.
Yeah.
He's ultra sensitive to surprise parties, and they constantly do it to him.
They do it to him all the time because he always falls for it.
You'd think he'd file some sort of formal complaint.
I do not like surprise parties.
People should not let themselves into my quarters. Also, I'd like it if Riker quit suggesting I have sex with everything.
Not even everyone. Everything.
Hey, you gonna fuck that?
Hey, dibs. That's my chair. Dibs!
This is a special statue you take to Ryza and fuck.
Anyone sees you fucking this statue, they know you want to fuck.
So yeah, he's like, oh no, only this random transporter chief is here. I was hoping for... Never mind. Which, honestly, I know they're doing a deck officer surprise party for Worf, but isn't that kind of mean of a joke to pull on this poor transporter chief who gets to meet, like, one of the heroes of the Enterprise's history, and he's just like, oh, God damn it! I don't want to meet you, you dumb redheaded nobody.
Hey, is anyone important going to be here? And you're just like, oh.
I'm part of this whole surprise party thing. My job is to be the nobody, so you're disappointed.
Oh, they specifically picked me out because I look like a schlub.
But he's like, well, I guess I will proceed to the bridge myself, and starts walking through, and then he runs into Picard hanging right outside the door.
Yeah, Picard's basically walking in as he's walking out. He's like, oh, hey, Worf, welcome aboard.
I guess you can walk along with me. I don't care, though.
Follow me to definitely not a surprise party.
I can promise you it's not a surprise party, number four. By the way, I've started numbering everybody.
Yes, you're number four. I'll let you guess who's number three. It's my penis.
Yeah, so, you know, he's like, ah, sir, it is very good to see you again. Oh, yes, Worf, yes, whatever.
Yes, that's great. Anyway, follow me.
No one cares. We're going to go right back to work on the bridge. I apologize, sir, that I did not invite you to my wedding.
Yeah, because he thinks that maybe the captain got all pissed off because he was like, oh, shit, I got married and I didn't even invite anyone from the Enterprise. Oh, man, I am a huge asshole.
I am very curious, that is that supposed to be canon that he didn't even think to invite the Enterprise crew? Or was it just that he did, but they were off doing important Romulan stuff? And, like, because otherwise it does create kind of a weird discontinuity issue where you're like, why didn't he invite?
Well, because... Alexander was going to be shipping off, and we didn't have time to...
Still, you send the invitation. Everyone knows with weddings, you send invitations to people you know won't be able to make it just so that they send you fucking presents.
All right, let's open up the present from Picard. That's some tea, great. Oh, and the good one from Riker, a fuck statue, all right.
Oh, good, great. Well, hold on, I got them reversed. Apparently this is fuck tea, and this is one of Picard's stupid archaeological finds.
Still can fuck it, though.
Oh, yes, it's a goes-off fuck statue. Only four of them left in existence.
Very rare, and I don't care.
Okay, so Picard's... like, oh, don't worry about it. No one cared about your wedding anyway.
Yeah, they're just being huge assholes. Like, mm-hmm. I get that you want to do a surprise party, but man, you're just making him feel like shit for no reason.
Yeah, no, they just belittle him for a good 10 minutes. And poor off transporter chief nobody who gives a fuck. It's just, this is not a good prank.
No. They just don't know how to pull a good prank.
You feel like the right way to pull this prank is not to wander him painfully through the Enterprise for a long time, but instead of beaming him to the transporter room, just beaming him directly to the surprise party.
Yeah, just beam him into whatever observation deck you're on, and then be like, surprise, you big dumb idiot.
Yeah, you thought you were transporting somewhere else and you didn't.
Yeah, it's us, your friends.
We like you despite you.
You dumb emotionless fuckstick. Data's got more than you.
Well, yeah, now he has tons.
He got too much.
Well, they walk him into an observation lounge, and wouldn't you know it, here's all the bridge crew that you remember, and they're all like, surprise!
Hey, good. Mm-hmm. Good. We actually like you, and even though I was pretending not to know anything about your wedding or give a fuck, I know all about it, and congratulations, dude.
And I'm actually super pissed that you didn't invite me instead of non-committal, so there's that.
So there is that. I am going to make you sleep in the worst bunk.
You have to sleep in a warp nacelle.
It's actually very soothing.
I find this soothing, Captain. Oh, shoot.
Damn.
I'm going to put fleas in there.
I'm going to make you sleep in Riker's room.
Oh. I'll have you know I'm up most nights. Fucking.
Damn it. You're free to play through.
If you don't mind some fairly tidy seconds.
Very tidy seconds.
He's an officer.
Yeah.
And a gentleman.
Damn it. That's what I was going to say. You ass.
Anyway, everyone's here. Troy's here and Crusher, the whole gang. Anyone who's a major character from the Enterprise crew. Geordi, you know, Data's there and he's got his emotion chip.
Yeah.
And they're all very excited to see him. They're like, Worf, who immediately gets scared and goes into his Mock Barrah fighting stance.
Oh, yeah. The second they're like, surprise, he's like,
I will kill you all. I think you forgot that I have 3 hearts and 2 spines or whatever.
And they're like, oh, you don't have to be so startled. A Klingon is never startled. Yeah, but you just were, though.
A Klingon is never startled. I was just piss my pants scared.
A Klingon arrives exactly when he means to.
And then he has some just general light banter with the crew so that you, and it's mostly just, again, explaining why it's okay for him to be here.
Yeah. They're like, oh, isn't your wife going to be all pissed off? And like, no, she's fine with it.
She has important, whatever Jadzia Dax's role on the ship was. You don't remember.
She's
the chief science officer.
She does science. She does machines. Oh, no, wait. O'Brien does machines.
All right. Harder question for you then, John. What was Ezri Dax's job on the ship?
Man, I don't know. I have no idea what the fuck Ezri was doing there.
She was the ship's the station's counselor.
Thing is, that's what I assumed, given the personality she had.
Yeah. Yeah, she basically had the Troy role.
Yeah.
So anyway, everyone's there, and Riker has to drop some, like, I've heard your wife likes to fuck.
Yes, thanks, Riker.
We did recently get married, and we were a Klingon and Dax, who was a notorious fuck slug. So, yes, you're right. We boned down.
Ah, good. Be sure not to anger her during the honeymoon, or you'll be sleeping on the floor. I'm Riker. Keep your dick clean.
It's me, Riker. Want some tidy seconds? I clean up where I've been.
Oh, God damn it.
I take only pictures and leave only footprints.
Don't forget your anniversary. I understand that little woman swings a mean batleth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I swing a mean batleth. Ah, Riker, get out.
Welcome to the Enterprise. Please leave your keys in this fishbowl.
I forgot this entire ship is horny on Maine.
Not me. I'm Geordi.
I'm Geordi. I'm never horny.
I never understand sex in the slightest. I just hit on anyone who's subordinate to me because they don't have a choice.
I walk into anything anyone's doing. I don't really understand boundaries. Geordi LaForge.
This visor lets me see everything, but not whether or not it's appropriate.
Or why kids love the great taste of Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
Ah, I have studied that extensively. Data's all like, they enjoy it because of the polymers found in sugars.
That would be great. I want to see that.
A TNG Cinnamon Toast Crunch
yes.
commercial, just like the whole thing.
Yes.
It is not honorable for an adult to enjoy cereal.
That's right. It's one of the many tenets of Klingon culture. Do not enjoy cereal. Oh, you can eat it, but you better not enjoy it.
You should relax, Worf. It's one of the 293 rules of acquisition to eat cereal.
You can't enjoy it. We only have Kashi good friends on Klingon.
We only have Klingon blood checks.
Yep, there you go. So that's pretty much it. Would they get a message from Admiral Kashiwara, you know, the person from Starbase 88,
mm-hmm.
but we don't get any resolution. Basically, the end of the chapter is Picard being like, I'll go check that out. Everyone stay here and party.
Yeah, and they're all like, are you sure, Captain? I'm sure. You guys stay in here, and I like to watch.
I'll be in my ready room.
I'll be ready in there.
Ooh.
It's my room for being ready in.
If you know what I mean.
That was a horny episode.
Yeah, well, I mean, TNG is pretty horny. I'm not going to lie.
It is very horny. And if you're watching, like, the end of TNG, there's this whole thing that never gets resolved where, Worf and Deanna Troi are getting together.
Yes. So, I mean, that was basically one of the final weird little tension things was, oh, Deanna's getting with Worf and Riker's kind of jealous.
Yeah, Riker's got this kind of mama bear about any vagina he's ever seen before.
How dare you?
Oh, I haven't dated her in 7 seasons, and I'm real pissed that you would consider it.
How dare you try and give me tidy seconds?
Mr. Worf, I challenge you to a sword fight. I traditionally use a bat laugh. Yes, no.
Yes,
no,
well, I'm sure yours is curved. I'm Riker.
Ah, the double-headed Klingon penis.
The old double-headed Klingon penis.
We should get out of here before this gets too gross. Thank you for listening, everyone. I think there's going to be a certain number. I don't know how many episodes of this we're going to do.
It should probably be 17. 11?
There's 34 chapters.
Yeah, and if we do 3 at a time, then it should be about 11.
Yeah, okay, so that's probably where we're headed.
Plus,
so
the last two chapters are like one page each, so it's
but
fine.
Don't worry, after that, I'm gonna grab the reins again, and we'll be right back into Star Wars where we belong. I've got my eyes open for a Star Wars meets X-Men crossover novel. I'll find it.
By God, I will find dumb shit.
Either it already exists, or Patton Oswalt is working on it right now.
So, our bonus content, since we aren't doing Star Wars stuff, is now switching over to, for this book only, X-Men or Star Trek related stuff.
Yeah, the X-Men wiki is boring. It's just called like xmen.com/fandom.
Oh yeah.
It's not that Star Trek is famously has memory alpha. So those are our two options.
And I'm going to go ahead and say this. I dipped my toe into memory alpha a little bit. They are way more organized yes. than the Star Wars people.
Yeah, the Star Wars one is loose and loosey-goosey. The Star Trek one, it's hard to find crazy nonsense.
Because they're just like, this happened, and then it gives you the reference episode.
Yeah.
And then this, reference episode. Sometimes this is the case, reference episode.
Yeah, whereas with the X-Men stuff, you'll find yourself falling into ridiculous tangent holes.
Oh, the holes you fall down in the X-Men wiki is just sort of like, and then this person meant that, and this happened. You're like, who the fuck is that? What is this? What storyline are you talking about?
Yeah, so the problem, we're going to be running into a very different kind of content for the bonus content fuel, but don't worry, it's going to be the same old discussion stuff. Basically, the problem we're going to run into is that Star Trek is more rigorously story-bibled, and so there isn't, like, Santa Claus and Mickey Mouse and shit like that to report on.
Yeah.
But you never know. You might get an entire episode about how to make the drinks that they had at the Las Vegas Quarks Bar.
Hell yeah.
So it should be still a good time. And if you'd like to be a part of that good time, then go to patreon.com/systemmastery.
Yeah, support us at the $2 or more level. You unlock that and any lower tier of bonus content as well. We put out so much stuff.
On average, 7 episodes of bonus content a month.
It's a little excessive.
We probably make too much. People have been talking to us about cutting back because apparently it sounds like we're dying.
I mean, I am, but yeah, you know, who isn't?
Apparently we used to sound like young vital people who enjoyed this, and now we sound angry.
Yeet me into the shadow realm.
Anyhow, thank you so much for listening. I don't know how to end these episodes.
I'm the old Knucklehead, and I'm the best there is at what I do. And what I do is shoot off into the sky.
You took both parts. I had shoot off into the sky ready.
Aww.
This is punishment for the officer and a gentleman bit, isn't it?
It is.